This is Rainmaker.fm, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at hacktheentrepreneur.com/Rainmaker. That's hacktheentrepreneur.com/Rainmaker.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so glad you decided to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. This episode comes to you across the Great Firewall of China. Before today's guest could claim ownership of an $800,000 a year company, he was just a wandering 20-year-old backpacker. He planned on making a brief stop in the city of Beijing to earn some funds, see the Great Wall, and move on to his next adventure. Turns out it would be more than just enough to earn him enough funds to travel. It would lead him to become a pillar of Beijing's pop culture. He is the founder and creative dictator of China's first streetwear clothing company, Plastered T-Shirts. He has also been awarded the British Chamber of Commerce in China's Entrepreneur Award in his home country of England. He lives near his flagship store in Beijing with his wife and four children, and is far happier now than when he first arrived in the city. Now, let's hack Dominic Johnson Hill. Before we get going, I want to take a minute to thank the awesome sponsor of Hack the Entrepreneur, FreshBooks, for making my life easier and for sponsoring the show. What is the one thing that I am not good at? I am absolutely horrible at staying on top of my bookkeeping and accounting for my business. Like, I'm terrible at it. FreshBooks is designed for small business owners like you and like me. FreshBooks integrates directly with three things that I use every day in my business: PayPal, Stripe, and MailChimp. It goes beyond that now. I can fully integrate it with my credit card and my bank accounts, so I don't even have to worry about keeping track of my expenses. It does it all for me. Really, I think the only thing it doesn't do for my business is actually make the money. But it keeps track of it all on the other side, which is amazing to me. To start your 30-day free trial today, go to freshbooks.com/hack. And don't forget to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, we are back on Hack the Entrepreneur, and we have another awesome guest today. Dominic, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, Dominic, let's jump straight into this, shall we? What is the one thing, Dominic, that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think if I look at everything that got me in trouble at school, I see now as my biggest sort of contributing factor to my success. At school, I was immature. I was impulsive. I was always getting into dangerous things. I was a daydreamer. And I see all of those things as the reason why I'm successful now. You know, I got kicked out of school. I dropped out of school. I didn't go to university. I was impulsive. I left England at age 17. I went to Africa. And I did dangerous things in South America. And then I was adventurous and came to China in 1993. And impulsive and a daydreamer. And I started these creative businesses in Beijing without any plan. And just went about doing things, you know, my way. And I think that all of those things that got me in trouble at school are the things that made me successful today. And I can remember, you know, my teacher, when I got in trouble at school, writing a letter to my mom listing all of these problems that I had. And I realized that those problems are actually my superpowers, you know, because education really fits the mainstream. And so when you become an entrepreneur, all those challenges you had in schooling actually become your superpowers. So, you know, I'm in the creative industry and I see that, you know, being immature is one of my greatest strengths. And that, you know, when you're immature, like a child, and you think like a child, you have a more creative mind. But the conundrum in life, that's a new word that I've learned because I'm so dyslexic, I can't even spell it. But it's, you know, children are creative, but they don't have the skills to bring about their creative ideas. But we get older in life and we gain these incredible skills, but we lose our creative edge because it gets washed out of us by society and family and all of these things. And so when I arrived in China, I went into the creative industry, which is an industry here which is very untapped. And the reason is in China, it's a very practical country. It's a very numbers-driven kind of society. And if you're going to compete with Chinese entrepreneurs, when it comes to numbers, you're going to find it very hard to beat them. But in my world, I'm in the creative world. I create artwork that goes on T-shirts and apparel and other brands that I create artwork for. And I'm in an industry that's very small and have very few competitors. And my immature side has brought about some of my best artwork. And my impulsive side has brought about some of my best ideas and my best businesses. So I think that what's given me an edge is all of these things that really got me in trouble at school and have brought me a certain level of success here in China.
I love it. I love the answer. And so you can't compete with Chinese business people on numbers, obviously.
I can't. I'm not a numbers guy.
Well, most of us can't, right? Just a certain type of business person, just they're good at that, right? But then you say the creative side, but did I read it wrong that you don't actually do the artwork because you're not an artist or a painter yourself?
That's right. Yeah, I can't use design software.
But that doesn't stop you either, right? I'm not good at the numbers. No. I'm not good at the art, but I'll still make this amazing business.
But I'm a dreamer. And I'm a daydreamer. Yeah. And what I did with my business is I took Chinese icons. I took Chinese everyday items and I played with them. I had color and I found artists and I found designers to take my ideas and make them come to life. And I think, you know, any piece of artwork that I generate is a collaboration, and a collaboration always makes artwork more beautiful and more exciting. And, you know, all my artwork is aimed at the Chinese market. So I collaborate with Chinese designers and it gives it a Chinese edge. So although I can't essentially do anything, I can't even use design software. If I draw a dog, it'll look like a 5-year-old drawing a dog, but it doesn't stop me from having ideas. And I live for my ideas. And, you know, my goal in life is to bring about my ideas, to make them happen. And that's what makes me excited. It's not an Excel document telling me my net profit. It's looking at an idea and it coming to life. And even when it doesn't hit a mark and no one buys it, I still find that exciting.
Nice. I love it. I love it. And so you got in trouble in school with the things that have now made you successful as an entrepreneur. And at what point do you realize, were you still in school when you realized that actually these teachers in this society sort of telling me that this is not how I'm supposed to be, that they're actually wrong and that I can do big things with this? Or is there a time where you're like, oh, like especially as you're getting older, like later high school, maybe, and you're kind of like, you start to mature. Maybe you're like, oh, maybe these people are actually right. Maybe I do need to be boring. You know what I mean? I struggled with this stuff myself and I went totally I didn't have the same path as you, but yeah, I didn't go to school. I went into a band and I did things, right? But there is that struggle. Do you remember this happening and you just being like, no, screw it. I know what's right for me and I know I can do big, cool things.
Yeah, I didn't gain the confidence to think that I could do big, cool things until I became an entrepreneur. But what I did was, I remember my mother, after I, you know, failed my sort of equivalent of high school, you know, taking me to this terrible university, which is for basically dropouts who are from posh families who go and study how to manage their family estates. And on the way, I put on a Jimi Hendrix, you know, cassette. And I remember listening to Jimi Hendrix and thinking that I wanted to do something adventurous with my life. And I thought, if I remain in England, I'm going to remain in a society where people expect things of me. You know, I'm from a certain family. I should do this. You know, I'm from a certain part of England, I have a certain accent. You know, people, you know, there's a lot of pressure when you remain in your own home and society. And so I just thought, I need to get out of here. And I went to Africa and suddenly I had a whole new start on life. And I realized that my schooling had ended, but my education had just begun. And then I started to learn all these skills and languages traveling around Africa, South America and India. And I spent 3 years doing those three countries. And then I arrived in China and there was nobody here. You know, at least there were no foreigners here then. There were two bars in the whole city and the city was flat. Now it's a big high-rise city. And I just saw opportunity everywhere. And it was a little playground for an entrepreneur like me. And I just started doing things that were very simple and common sense. I think people had done all over the world, but hadn't been done here. So I was very fortunate that I took myself out of England. I challenged myself and I embraced adventure. And then I ended up falling into the right place at the right time. and just starting businesses, most of which were quite successful because of timing.
Wow. Can you remember and tell us one of these common sense sort of things you did for money early on? Right. Like back in the early 90s when you got to...
All right, I tell you, my first business, and you won't believe it because it's absolutely insane, was I did an English teaching job for a tobacco company. And then they asked me to do some market research for them in China to see where their cigarettes were selling, because they were selling cigarettes all over China. So they sent me with a bottomless sort of, account to travel and stay in any hotel I wanted to all over China to see where their cigarettes were selling. Simple information, distribution, pricing, and the codes on the packets. After providing that information, I asked them for a job. They said, you don't have a university degree. You can't have a job with this big, company. So I thought, screw you. I'm going to start my own business. So I started my own business with $400. I traveled to all the cities in the north of China where they didn't have offices. And I set up a network in every single city. The first person was a taxi driver, because he was the guy, the only people with cars were taxi drivers. Then I went to 40 kiosks that sold cigarettes, and I had them on my books. Then I went to the wholesale markets, and I met the big guys that were wholesaling the cigarettes. The taxi driver's job was to go to the kiosks and the wholesale, get the information, put it in a simple form. I bought him a fax machine. It was the days before the internet. And he would fax it to me in Beijing. I would put that information together of the 14 cities that I set up on $400, believe it or not, going around on train, and they would fax me this information. I'd take the information. I had a Chinese student who then put it into an Excel document to me, and I started selling it to the tobacco companies. And I was charging them $15,000, $20,000 a month for this very basic information on their product. And all it was the distribution in retail, the wholesale, what was being said on the street. And this whole thing was being done for me by people who already had jobs, people who owned kiosks, people who worked in wholesale markets, and taxi drivers. And then once a month, I would travel to these cities. I would meet with the wholesale guys who were giving me the real juicy information, take them out, get them drunk. And that was my very first business. And it was hugely successful because, cigarette companies were making billions or millions in China, selling cigarettes, and they couldn't get information on their distribution and where their product was going. And they needed that information because in China, it's all about pricing. If you have a pack of cigarettes and it's worth $2, people buy it. If it drops down to $1.50, they stop buying it because it's not worth as much to them in terms of face value when they go to a meeting and they put it on the table. So it's very important for them to have very stable pricing. So if they oversupplied the market, the pricing went down, they would lose their market share. So that information I was providing them was incredibly valuable. And I was the only one doing it. Eventually, I did that for 5 years. I lost my market because the market became so big, they ended up doing it themselves. And I had no passion for numbers and all this kind of stuff. But it supplied me with an incredible lifestyle because I worked about a week of the month and I was making crazy money.
Wow. And it's interesting. I guess you learned at that point how valuable information is.
Yeah.
And information that you got from the taxi driver that could find it for you, and you just compiling it and giving it to a company was extremely valuable.
Yeah.
So you have $400. I got to go to these 14 places. I got to talk to a taxi driver. At some point in the back of your head, you're like, either I'm a genius or I'm completely out of my mind.
Well, you know what? I was kind of
turns out you were a genius
as well, because as soon as the cigarettes started to take off, I looked at other products too, because I had that network there, and I started doing alcohol as well. So I ended up basically being a drug czar, in terms of information. I was providing information on cigarettes and alcohol and flogging it to these companies, overseas. I just thought, again, I was just in the right place at the right time. And no one was adventurous enough to get out there and do it. And these cities were just opening up. It was China, 1994. The doors had only been open a few years. The market economy had only been there a few years. And I spoke, I learned Chinese quite quickly. It's not a difficult language to speak. And I love travel, So I traveled to way out places in the northeast, the Muslim part of China, and the northwest and in the northeast where foreigners hadn't even been, So it was super exciting for me. And it was very basic because, I'm not a numbers guy, but all I was doing was putting together really basic information.
That's awesome. And Chinese isn't a difficult language to speak?
No, I think people get frightened by it. Again, with my immature gene, I learn languages like a child, and I just listen and I copy and I just say it back to them. And if I get it wrong, they correct me and I remember. I've never had a lesson in Chinese, and I just picked it up. And now I even have a TV show now, in Chinese. And it's just something I picked up and didn't give it an awful lot of thought. A lot of people struggle with it because they think too much about it and think about the tones. But really, if you just speak it, it comes naturally.
Wow. Nice. All right. So at the beginning, you told us it's what it is you're good at, what has sort of defined your success. You've told us numerous times you're no good at numbers. So we don't want that for an answer. But as an entrepreneur, what is something that you are not good at besides numbers? Something that you just struggle with and you've had to kind of either just ignore and not do, or how you need people to do that for you?
Ooh, where do I start? Management, I'm terrible at. I would say self-discipline, I'm awful at. Sitting down, I can't sit down for more than a minute at a time. I'm hyperactive, you know, I'm ADHD. I don't spend more than 10 minutes in the office at any time. I do all my meetings walking. I'm awful at management. Yeah, the numbers, forget about it. You know, I have an awesome team that do that for me. So, you know, I'm terrible at tons of things. And it's taken me a while to get the right people on board to do those things for me with my current business. But, you know, I don't have an awful lot of pressure because I'm not out in life to build the world's biggest business. It's never been the dream of mine to build the biggest. It's just to build the best. I'm highly competitive. You know, when it comes to any sport or anything, I have to win and I love to win, but I'm not out to build the biggest business. I just want to be better than everybody else. And so it takes a lot of pressure off me, you know, and I'm in the creative field here and I can guarantee that my current business is the best in the market, you know, here in China. And I'm proud of that. And if I see someone come along that's in the same industry as me, I'm just out to beat them, you know, and I love that. I love that, you know, the competition of business.
That's awesome. How do you, as entrepreneurs, one of our biggest, as human beings in general, I guess, one of our biggest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes, and just failing at something. So in your business, when you follow your gut or make a decision to act and go this direction, and it turns out that you are completely wrong, if you set your team in the wrong direction, how do you deal with this? Can you walk us through how to be wrong?
You know what? Yeah, I think I don't really see that as a wrong and a right. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, we all know that we learn our biggest lessons from making mistakes. And I think that, you know, I've led my team in the wrong direction many, many times, but I've also hit some real gems as well. And I think that, you know, when we do something wrong, we look back and we see what we did wrong and then we learn for the next event. But I think, you know, in terms of the process of doing things wrong, I'm a very impulsive guy, and I think that too many people spend too much time doing research on this, that, and everything, and then throw themselves into that idea after spending too much time and money researching it. I'm impulsive. I have an idea, and I just go with it. And many fall flat. I would say the majority fall flat, but I'm in this game in life to make my ideas come to life, and the ideas in my head are awesome. And when I get the final product, almost undoubtedly always love it, and the customer doesn't like it, that's unfortunate. But looking back in life and all the things that went wrong with my current business, and as Steve Jobs would say, when you line up the dots, it all makes perfect sense, you know? So I just try to keep thinking along those lines. Of course, you take knocks and you have mornings where you don't want to go to work and you shouldn't smoke that cigarette and go back to bed. But you do occasionally, and you get a bit down on yourself. You know, that's natural, you know, and I'm an insecure person like anyone else. But I have a great support network in terms of I have an incredible wife and children, and they're an inspiration. And I think, you know, getting it wrong is just natural. You just got to embrace that. And you've got to, you know, move away from being scared. And you can't think about what other people think, or you're just going to live their lives. So, you know, I wouldn't be here where I am today if I was continually worried about what my family and other people thought about me. So just got to stick with my superpowers, you know, and be impulsive and be a risk taker and take life by the balls and know that I'm going to be wrong, you know, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I was wondering if maybe it would be harder because of your competitive nature. And the fact that you want to be the best, but you are also aware that it's not a straight path to being the best. There's going to be all kinds of things hitting you. And I like that you said that there's some days that, yeah, you wake up and you just want to have that cigarette and go back to bed. Because it's true. Things side swipe us all the time in business, right? We get hit from things we don't even expect, or we're wrong in some crazy way. And it does. It takes us out for a bit. And then we get back into the game and just keep going forward. It's all we can do, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's it. And For me, it's like there's two sides to what you're saying. There's one is the idea side, the creative idea side, which is what I live for. I don't believe I've done anything wrong on that side. I love every single creative idea I've ever brought to market. The other side is like when I open a new store and it completely fails and no one buys the product and I've invested a large amount of money into that store and we've opened up in a new city like Shanghai. And this has happened to me and the revenues weren't good and I had to close that store down and the team takes a bit of a hit. You know, that hurts, you know, for sure. And, you know, if I was to walk you through that process, it's very simple. You know, I wanted to open a shop in Shanghai, I opened it up, you know, the profits weren't there. I hated traveling, you know, to that city. I wasn't good at managing a satellite city. I'm much better at keeping things close. And I learned a hard lesson, but I've ended up now, you know, realizing that, you know, I want a small business. I want to keep it close. I want my life to be fairly simple. I don't want to have to be working 16-hour days. And that's the lesson I learned from failing in Shanghai.
Wow. So, but you're still going to get impulsive. You're still going to want to take on new challenges, I'm sure. So how now, with all you've been through, how do you decide? I was going to call it like a project, but I mean, it could be a new store. It could be going into a new city or a new country or a new neighborhood, whatever that happens to be. I'm sure at some point you're still going to want to move into new directions. How would you decide that, yeah, this is a direction that impulsively we're just going to go for it? I got the feeling in my gut that we're going for this and that's it. But do you know what I mean? What is that? What are you looking for? What are you trying to?
I think if it's a creative decision in terms of a new product, a new design, a new direction, you know, one of the brand promises we have in our business is it comes from a Mao Zedong saying, which is we're in a constant state of revolution. And I just continue to look at challenging, you know, the market and the creative market and the art market here and how people think. And if it's crazy and it's a bit edgy, it could potentially end me up in trouble. It's naughty. It's immature. Then I'm definitely going to go with it without a doubt, because I know that I cannot fail then, because I know I'll end up with something that I absolutely love. If it's a business decision, investment into a new market, or a big new product that could bring, you know, a certain amount of danger to the business and its cash. I just have to think carefully, you know, on that side, I speak to my accountant. I say, this is how much money I want to spend. You know, if it all goes wrong, what's the worst case scenario, you know? And I think worst case scenario is a good one, you know, in many things, you know, because quite often we're terrified of making a new step. But if you look at what the worst case scenario is, it's never quite as bad as you think. So worst case scenario is a good one for me as well, because I try not to think about losing face. I try not to think about being embarrassed or what other people might think about me. I just, in terms of the business thing, it's just really what's, you know, what's the worst case scenario? Am I going to go bankrupt? Well, then we might think about that, you know, or is it just going to hurt the cash flow? Maybe I'm going to have to not send out bonuses for the next 6 months. If it's something like that, then I'm probably going to go for it.
Nice. That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. And have somebody else to deal with the numbers and show you the numbers.
Absolutely.
Not you trying to guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done, over a long time now, you've done a lot of cool things. You told us about the first business from China. You have now built Plastered Tees up to something very substantial. And it's really, really, really impressive. In a city from looking from the west over here to Beijing, China, to what you do sort of with business and with t-shirts, seems like the last place in the world you would possibly ever want to do that, which I don't know, right? It's totally from, I've never been there. I don't know. It's just, that's what I'm thinking. And it's bold and brave, but there's this thing I've been dealing with, which is called the entrepreneurial gap, which is, as entrepreneurs, we are always setting goals for ourselves. And as we hit those goals, or even before we hit that goal, we instantly throw 5 or 10 loftier goals ahead of ourselves. And we're always, always, always looking forward, which we have to do, but we never stop and turn around and look at where we've come and congratulate ourselves on the amazing stuff that we've accomplished up till now. And it seems to be a thing where we never live just today and congratulate ourselves. It's always, no, in 6 months, I'll be so much better. In a year, my business will be so much better. So can you stop right now for us, Dominic, and look back at all that you've done in business and in life and tell us whether you are happy with what you've accomplished up to this point or not, and how you feel about it?
Right. Okay. I think that I might be different then in that respect, because actually I'm very grateful for where I am. And I do, you know, quite often, you know, go on a long walk, take 3 or 4 beers with me in my backpack around the beautiful old historical era of Beijing, drink all 4 beers, you know, very quickly, because I'm a quick drinker, put on, you know, some Franz Ferdinand, and I think, what an incredible life I have and how far I've come. And I celebrate it. Sure, I celebrate it because it's that kind of good energy that then starts to bring out ideas in my head again. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I set goals, but I don't set too many goals. You know, I take life at a fairly good pace. You know, I don't work that hard. I don't want to work that hard. I, you know, it, much like, you know, in the 4-hour work, we kind of put the guys all about how to generate cash now. I'm very much about cash now. You know, and spending it now and having fun now and spending that money on experiences, going traveling. I just came back from a 6-day, you know, motorbike trip around Laos into the middle of nowhere in the mountains. I take time off work all the time and I truly appreciate, you know, where I've come, and I do celebrate, you know, how far I've come. And I'm very proud of that. And I'm not too audacious in setting too many goals. You know, I'm sure I set goals, and health goals, running goals, physical goals, business goals, but not too many. And there are times where I get disappointed with myself and I think I didn't get enough done. But I think they're outweighed by the times when I sit down and I think that actually I've done some pretty awesome things. I'm pretty proud of where I've come. And I like to, you know, I like to have those moments. I like to have those 4 beers and go for a walk and listen to Franz Ferdinand. It's inspiring for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you should be proud because you've done some amazing things and it's an inspiring story you've had. So we've talked in passing, Dominic, just about your business. Can you specifically tell everybody where they can go find out about your business and about you?
Yeah, I mean, my website is just plastered.com. I mean, I started a creative t-shirt brand here in Beijing. You know, it's where our whole market is aimed at, you know, young Chinese. You know, we have a website, plastered.com, and it's just creative design artwork that inspires me about, you know, China. It's basically a celebration of my life here. All the artwork is a celebration of things that I love, you know, and my life here in Beijing. You know, I have a very fortunate life that I mean, it's all passions for me. I love art. I love artwork. I love t-shirts. I love Beijing. And that's what my business is all about. And so, yeah, that's it really. I mean, you can Google my name, Dominic in Johnson Hill, and you can see some of the art projects I've been involved in and some of the more immature things I do. If you look at the videos that we have on our website, they're probably about as immature as they get. And I've got myself in trouble, you know, many a time, including with British royalty. When if you Google my name, you'll see that I was very rude to Prince Andrew once. But, you know, these are things that I'm very proud of.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dominic. I'm going to post plastered t-shirts onto the website for everyone to find. And I'm going to set up a challenge for all the listeners who are mostly in the West, but somebody has to be the first one to go to a plastered store in Beijing and say hi to Dominic for us. I might make it out there with my family first, but we'll see if somebody else can beat me to it. But thank you so much, Dominic, for your time. I appreciate it so much, and keep doing what you're doing because it's really awesome.
Thank you so much. And thanks for the conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Dominic, thank you so much. That was such an awesome conversation. The conversation actually went on way before and way after. Because, I don't know, we kind of hit it off. But aren't you, like, tempted to just go to Beijing now and walk around that lake he talked about and drink, like, 4 beers really fast with him? Sounds like fun. He runs a business that is, it doesn't control his life in any way. It just gives him freedom to be artistic, be creative, and to travel and spend time with his beautiful family. That's amazing. That's what business is about. But Dominic, you said A lot of smart things. But he said one thing. He said one thing, didn't he? We're going to go back to the beginning because we just can't skip over this because I think it's that important. So did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And I think that all of those things that got me in trouble at school are the things that made me successful today. And I can remember, you know, my teacher, when I got in trouble at school, writing a letter to my mum listing all these problems that I had. And I realized that those problems are actually my superpowers.
And that's the hack. Dominic. Ooh, thank you. That was beautifully said, man. So there's two things here. The schooling part and the things that we can think back to grade school, getting in trouble, and whatever it is, however our schooling went, sometimes those things, and things that even in your family, or things that maybe made you stand out and maybe not quite perfectly normal. It's okay to not be normal. It's cool. But you have to think of those things. That is you. That's how you are. That's what you are. Don't try and necessarily change those things. Maybe try and emphasize those things and know that you yourself is all it takes to be awesome. And then he says, that's when we become entrepreneurs, those are the things that become our superpowers. That's amazing. We become entrepreneurs. People aren't born entrepreneurs. I hope I've made that explicitly clear that people aren't born entrepreneurs. You were not born one or not born one. Some of us just step up and call ourselves entrepreneurs and start building and making cool stuff. It's just the way it is. You can do it. It's there. It's just really about just stepping up and saying that you are an entrepreneur and becoming an entrepreneur. That's really just all there is to it. And I love the way he says that, because when we do become, after we start making stuff or building stuff or creating things, then it's easy to look back and be like, oh, wow, yeah, she's an entrepreneur, right? But was she before? Doesn't matter, right? She is now. And that's amazing, Dominic. And I love that, because you're definitely entrepreneurial in the lifestyle you've created and what you do. And I love how you shared that. So thank you so much, Dominic. That was just a lot of fun, man. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Please check it out. It's pretty cool. I have a wicked sort of thing going on. So I do this email once every Sunday. I'm writing my best sort of work every Sunday afternoon. I'm sending out one email to you with something cool that's going to help you kind of kick ass throughout the week. The email list gets even better for the next 5 weeks starting this Sunday. That was actually yesterday. Sorry, but that was yesterday, but still, it's going for another 4 weeks for you. And I'm giving away 10 copies of Seth Godin's new book. Seth Godin was on the show last week. If you haven't checked it out, go back and listen. I've been told that that is the best Seth Godin interview somebody heard. Somebody told me that on Twitter. It must be true. Anyways, I'm giving away 10 copies of Seth Godin's book. Get on my email list. Go to hte.io if you wish. hte.io takes you to hacktheentrepreneur.com/SETH, Seth. And that's my newsletter. You're going to get my newsletter. And every week for the next 5 weeks, I'm going to give away, I'll announce two people that read that email will get a free copy signed by me if you want, unless that's ruining it for you. I'm not sure, but I'll email you. We'll talk about it. And I will email you, or no, I will not email. I will mail you a copy of Seth Godin's new book called It's Your Turn, or What to Do When It's Your Turn, and It's Always Your Turn, because it is your turn. So please get on that email list, hacktheentrepreneur.com/Seth. All right, I've drank way too much coffee and talked way too much. So until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.